world is full of wonder, mysteries for me and you. But it's not always easy to determine what is true. Now let's join Gwen and Brian as they ponder and construe. We have questions.
I just love that theme song. I love our new theme song for We Have Questions. I just love it.
I
gotta give it.
I know.
Don't you like it?
I do. It just like puts me in such a good mood. It wakes me up because it's like super early right now. And we're so lucky to have John Attenberry who did it for us. So that's fantastic. Thanks, John.
Yeah, John Attenberry. He's amazing. He's a musician. He's a writer. He does fitness stuff.
Oh my God. He's Jack of all trades.
He is. NewAmericanFitness.net. Find him there. But yeah, when he came up with our theme song jingle, he said, I wonder what a 90s animated cartoon would sound like if Stevie Wonder did it. And I feel like he nailed it on the head, right?
Right. Absolutely.
But anyway, I'm Brian Kluger.
And I'm Gwen Reyes, and we're the hosts of a new podcast called We Have Questions.
Each episode, we break down a topic that has us scratching our heads. For our third episode, we're getting comfy with the queen of all media.
Oh my gosh, Brian, I'm so excited about this because, you know, we're sitting on the couch with Oprah today, and Brian, I have so many questions.
I do too. I mean, I feel like you and I are, you know, products of the 80s, and we've really grown up with Oprah Winfrey.
Yes. Did you watch a lot of Oprah as a kid after school?
Yeah, man, that was the jam. It was like that and like Muppet Babies, but I always remember Oprah being there and Muppet Babies. I don't know. That's where my mind goes to.
That's so funny. Mine is Oprah and Saved by the Bell reruns.
Saved by the Bell reruns and Oprah. But yeah, I just remember coming home and like, oh, Oprah's just, you know, back then she was a talk show. She was a daytime talk show. You know, this was before internet, this was before cell phones, this was before you know, anything that we have technological right now to get our information super fast. Oprah was kind of the person that brought us all the celebs and all the stuff, all the news, minus maybe Johnny Carson back then or David Letterman.
Yeah. I mean, she did something so special from 1986 until 2011 that many people have tried to replicate and very few people have been successful. There was some statistics that have come out in the last few years about afternoon talk shows that say that it's the hardest program type to get into and to make successful because everybody thinks that they're going to be able to kind of take the magic that Oprah did and put it in a bottle and reuse it and resell it. And it's just impossible. And nobody has ever been as successful as Oprah, closely followed by her mentor and predecessor, Phil Donahue.
Right. Oh my gosh, Phil Donahue just brought back so many memories.
I know. He was first. It's crazy.
It's insane. But Oprah has stood the test of time, and she is labeled the queen of media, kind of like I would say Howard Stern is labeled the king of media, but Oprah is the queen. They are on the same pedestal together, and there's a reason for that. Like, she really owns, if for lack of pun, for better word, like literally every media genre out there. Radio, yeah. TV, books, literature.
She has her own food company now, doing like food products. So yeah, Oprah's pretty stellar.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
You know, Oprah didn't start as the queen of media. She didn't. She didn't grow up with a silver platter in front of her. What was Oprah's life like growing up?
Well, you know, it's really funny that you ask that because you're exactly right. Like, we look at Oprah as this shining star, very well-to-do woman who is was the first multi-billionaire Black woman, or African American, at all to make multi-billion dollars. She is the richest African American in the country. And she did not start off that way. She worked really, really hard for it. She was born in 1954. So the same year as my mom and my dad, which is super cool. And she grew up and then eventually moved to Wisconsin after she turned 6 years old to live with her dad. or the man that she called her dad. During that time period, she was unfortunately molested by multiple family members, impregnated, lost her baby at the age of 14, and was kind of adrift. And when she went to live with her dad, she actually had an opportunity to get a job in radio, eventually getting a job at 19 years old for a local news station. And we've seen Oprah. She's got a big, bawdry personality, so she was not meant for the news at all. So she
was... It's hard to picture her as a news anchor or a reporter.
It's crazy. Like she did it for a few years, and then eventually she was invited to switch sort of focus and do the morning talk shows, which I think is a more flattering sort of way and thing for her to do.
Yeah, and you said she was born in Mississippi, but she moved to the North, Wisconsin. That's had to be a kind of a big shock or culture shock for her.
Yeah, for sure. And luckily she was really young when she did that. She moved at the age of 6 to Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then after after she had her baby and lost the baby, that's when she moved out with her dad.
Oh, okay. All right. And so she just started doing radio and television, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, started doing radio and television. Eventually she got her own show that she did for local access in Chicago. No, she went from New Jersey to Chicago, I think. I think I'm all over the map.
Okay. Baltimore. Because I know she's lived in a lot of places, but I remember she lived in Chicago during probably the height of her show, right?
Yes. Yeah. When the Oprah Winfrey Show went syndicated, it moved production from Baltimore to Chicago, and that's where it stayed from 1986 until 2011. She opened up her own studio because as she got more and more popular, she was out of the gate. That show was the most successful show ever. It also helped that there was essentially like one other morning talk show to compete with, which was the Phil Donahue Show. But she really was able to negotiate her contracts later in life. She built her own studio so that she would have control over her entire empire, which is one thing that she's credited with doing to encourage other women to do the same thing, to kind of take responsibility and take power for themselves and to build their own careers.
Wow. No, that's awesome. She's
pretty inspirational.
Yeah, she is. She's crazy. Like, she also she won an oratory contest that gave her a full scholarship to Tennessee State University. She also won Miss Black Tennessee Beauty Pageant at the age of 17.
Ooh, la, la.
I feel like she's done a lot. You know, just like she's like been involved in everything. I guess some of her first, what do you know some of her first like part-time jobs were?
Huh. Well, I know that she,
I guess her first job was, working at a local grocery store, which was my first job.
I don't pay attention to anything Oprah did other than like being on television.
My first job was sacking groceries at Tom Thumb. So I feel
you and Oprah.
I feel like, yeah, we're practically cousins right now because we both worked at the local grocery store. But I guess she, got to do the news on the radio when she was still a teenager, mm-hmm. Part-time, which is really, really cool. I mean, yeah. I've been on the radio. You've been on the radio. I feel like as we're dissecting Oprah Winfrey, I feel like you and I are so much like her.
I know. We're just built in the same cloth as her.
Yeah, but it's really cool that she was like the anchor and all that stuff. But
So young too, like at 19 years old to go, you know, at 17 is when she started doing the part-time radio. And then that led to a job on television. And by 19, she was an anchor. That's by 19, I was going to college and didn't know how to do my own laundry.
I know, me too. I was having somebody do it. I still don't know how to do laundry. No, I do. But yeah, no, she, it's crazy to see like Oprah where she is today and where she came from.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think attracted Oprah to the whole media journalistic realm?
You know, I think that it gave her the voice that she wanted to be able to reach as many people as possible. And she is so special in that way that she, you could listen to somebody talk like Oprah and it almost comes off condescending or a little woo-woo, over the top ridiculous. But she does it in such a personable, wonderful way that is also incredibly evolved. Like all the time, every few years, she has a different revolution for herself and a different renaissance. And that's one of the things I think that she brings to her world and to us as viewers and people who cherish Oprah, is the fact that she could speak to all of us on in different ways, but it all connects and resonates.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, there was something even, you know, from you and I being little, like watching kind of an adult talk show almost. Mm-hmm. Like there was just something that drew us to her and watch her and whatever she had to say. And I guess that's still true today.
Absolutely. I mean, how many times do we still to this day go, you have a car and you have a car.
You have a car. Everybody gets a car.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
My favorite is I love bread. I love bread.
Now, who was Brett? I don't remember that.
Oh, no. When she started working for Weight Watchers.
Oh, okay.
She did a thing about how much she loves bread.
Oh, okay. All right. I love bread. I love bread. I just want to eat bread. Oh, hey, who doesn't like bread? I like bread. We all like it. So the big thing hurt with her is her own show, the Oprah Winfrey Show. I guess it lasted 25 years, which is insanely long. And, you know, it was 5 days a week. So she had over 4,500 episodes, which if you think about 4,500 episodes, that's a lot.
Yeah. And she worked with some of the same staff members for almost the entire run
of the show. Which says something, because people didn't want to leave. People just enjoyed working there, doing that. And that's very rare to find these days.
There was a podcast that came out a year ago called Becoming Oprah that kind of talks about the loyalty and the love that the people who worked for Oprah have for her and still have for her. And even the ones who felt sort of, who might be, we would consider jaded, but really are not, all look back on their experience of working with Oprah and helping build this thing that no one else had ever seen before. Because they were inventing the wheel. Like a lot of the producers that worked on the Oprah Winfrey Show later went on to work in different talk shows and help work in her Harpo studios and productions to help bring other talk shows out to life. So it's really incredible that they were able to basically make something from clay.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. That's she really had a way with working with other people, and it showed through the 25 years.
Loved her.
Yeah. No, they still do, I think. It's crazy. I just love every bit of it. So with her 25 years of her Oprah show, what do you think are some of the best interviews or moments with Oprah?
Oh, man. Okay. So I have a few. I'm debating if I should go from my most memorable, which is, of course, Tom Cruise jumping on the couch, declaring how much in love he is with his ex-wife, Katie Holmes.
So why do you think that just sticks out in everybody's mind?
Because it was ridiculous, Brian. It was a ridiculous interview. He was a ridiculous human. It was so over the top. And it was like he was so comfortable with her. It was like nobody else was in that studio. Nobody else was in that room. They were just two friends talking about being in love. And he just like lost it. And it's such a genuine, pure moment, but also such an uncomfortable secondhand embarrassment moment.
No, yeah, it's because, you know, Tom Cruise, one of the biggest, you know, most popular, famous people on the planet. And he's on one of the most popular TV shows at the moment. And it's weird to see that, like, like you said, there were two people, just two of them in the studio, nobody else. And if it was that genuine, it's just crazy that they capture that on camera. Mm-hmm. And to see Tom Cruise like that. And it looked like it took Oprah off guard, right?
Right.
Like, I think she came out and said something like, I have never been seen Tom like that before, ever. Which is crazy because he was married before to Nicole Kidman for a long time. But when with Katie Holmes and then we knew about Scientology, everybody was just, yeah, it was a crazy interview. And now.
Yeah, It was a crazy interview that he was trying to sell way too hard, but now it's iconic.
Yeah, nobody.
It's been easily over 10 years since that happened.
Wow, has it really? Have we aged that much?
Yes, we have aged. They had a kid. They got divorced. Let's see, Tom Cruise, Oprah. Let's
find out. I'm trying to remember when year that was.
In 2016, it was 11 years before that. So, yeah, it's 12 years old.
Oh, my gosh. 12 years? I was just a young, spry chicken at the time.
I know. As was Tom Cruise.
God. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he famously jumped on the couch and, like, did a dance because he was so in love with Katie Holmes at the moment. We know how that went down.
Yep. So what is one of your favorite interviews that Oprah did?
I'm going to have to say one of my favorite ones was actually a big television event that I think spanned like 2 hours, I think. It was her Michael Jackson interview. It was in February of 1993, so it was basically around the time the Dangerous album came out, you know, the Black or White song and Heal the World. This would be the most watched interview in television history still to this day.
Yeah, is that crazy?
It's Michael Jackson. He's known for breaking records. But what was so cool about it is that Oprah got to go to Neverland Ranch, where really nobody ever goes, and did like 2 hours, 3 hour interview with him in his house, everything. And it was watched by over 90 million people. This is where we found out like that Michael talked about like his abusive relationship with his dad. And then his skin pigment disorder. But he's also denied getting any plastic surgery too.
Lies.
Yeah, exactly. Lies. Lies and slander.
I love these people that just come on TV and just boldface lie with their brand new face as if they didn't just get it put on a few weeks earlier.
Yeah, I mean, and you kind of like, you want to put yourself in Michael's shoes. Like, he's very reclusive, really, not reclusive, but he's like very private. You know, he still has the mind of a child. He doesn't want to say what he did to make him look like that. I don't know, but that was an excellent interview. Like, I remember him teaching her how to do the moonwalk, and it was just cool to see kind of like Michael be Michael, and Oprah was one of the best interviewers for him ever.
And what was really cool about that is it was a primetime interview and not part of her Oprah Winfrey show. So it was a chance early on in her career. I mean, she had been going for about 6 years at that point, but still early on enough that they were comfortable enough giving her a primetime spot to talk to the world's most famous musician.
Yeah. It's crazy. And well, not only that, but like, you know, just somebody as big as Jackson. I mean, it's nobody ever did that before, you know, up until I think the asshole Martin Bashir did his interview. Yeah, he's the worst. But
he is the worst.
But it shows that Oprah really had all the class and, you know, all that still back then. As she does now, I think. So I like that. Was there any other interviews that stuck out in your mind?
Well, let's see. I also really liked another primetime interview that she did, but that wasn't part of the Oprah Winfrey show. She did a few years ago for her, not Super Soul Sunday, but another thing. But for her Next Chapter, I was like, Oprah's Next Chapter, which is on her OWN network, which is called OWN as well. She interviewed Sissy Houston, who is Whitney Houston's mom.
Right.
And this was following the death of Whitney Houston. It was Sissy Houston's first time sitting down and talking about Whitney and talking about losing her daughter. And it's controversial because Sissy is clearly in denial and clearly a little delusional while doing the interview, but she digs into sort of her experience with Whitney, watching her go through the ups and downs of her career, not noticing or claiming to not notice her drug addiction, which I was like, I don't know how you could be a mother of somebody and not notice that your child is really messed up. But it was a really poignant, interesting interview. And it was, like I said, the first time anybody had spoken out following Whitney Houston's death that was close to her about their experience with Whitney.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Oprah does really well, is she can take a person who would normally never speak to anybody else, super uncomfortable, and set them at ease and make their experience matter and make the interview so special and so intimate that even when you go home and you're one of 36 million people watching Michael Jackson interviewed by Oprah, you feel like you're there with them.
Yeah, because I think Oprah really has the every person sort of vibe, like everything's going to be cool, you know, it's just us talking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe why Tom Cruise felt there was just them two in the studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think people feel comfortable with her.
I think so too. And I think they should. She's pretty lovely. I love that we're just gushing and gushing over Oprah. And one of the things, Brian, that Oprah can do that so many other endorsement deals and spokespeople cannot be successful of is anytime Oprah's hand touches something, it turns to gold. You know, her word and her recommendations can boost sales, can push something over, can sell out an entire book for somebody. And I'm just curious, what do you think that sort of power comes from for her? Do you think it's, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, of like, what do you think, why do Oprah's words and recommendations boost sales? And I think it's just her history and time and being with people and people seeing like that she is genuine, that she does confront things head on if they come. She doesn't hide from anything. She's honest and open. I think people over the years have genuinely taken a stake in that, and she advocates for a lot of good causes. And I think that's why, you know, if she says this book is great, tons of people are going to go buy it because I imagine her taste is pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
She knows exactly what she's doing. So, I mean, you know, that and that she's like everywhere. And then she has, you know, a big following of people that love literature, that love movies, that love all this stuff. I think that they take her word to heart. And I don't know.
And I think that it's interesting that still, even though she has no show anymore, you know, she's now at this point, she pops on to OWN occasionally, and then she also is a special correspondent for 60 Minutes. But every year, she still puts out her Oprah's favorite things.
Yeah.
She still puts out a list of that every single year, and every single year, those items sell out like hotcakes.
And you know, because we're kind of in a business of doing something similar where we promote things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she probably finds it fun because she probably gets these things for free and she tries them out and is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to tell my friends like what the best things to buy are, which is always fun because it's kind of like Christmas and Hanukkah at once. You get all these things and you get to tell your friends like these are the best things.
I wonder if Oprah gets millions of email pitches every single day from publicists begging her to try out whatever product that they're pitching.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure she has a team that's significantly like, oh yeah, we will pass this on to her, Of course, she would do that.
But it's interesting too, because sometimes that backfires on her. Like, do you remember the James Frey, A Million Little Pieces controversy?
Yeah. So he was different, right? Like, I mean, I guess it was a book and it was labeled as a memoir or true story. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after everything, I mean, she had him on, but she actually had him on a second time, right? To like discuss all the controversy there.
Right. That book was was officially the last Oprah book club book that she would do. That was like a new book. She eventually later brought the Oprah Winfrey or the Oprah book club back, but did it as classics or self-help books or something. But A Million Little Pieces considering when it was revealed that James Frey had made up almost all of the stories in his own memoir. The controversy behind that, she did have him back on to apologize and to explain what happened. And even then, she never quite forgave him. And she was always very trigger shy from that moment on to bring another brand new author and a brand new book on. But the funny thing is that she was able to recover, obviously, because she's Oprah. And he was able to recover as well. He became a pretty successful novelist after that.
Right. And so I want your opinion on this because I have a question about this.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. With Million Little Pieces, that book helped people, right? Before everybody knew the thing, right?
Right. Correct.
So why would anybody really be mad about it? Yeah, I guess it wasn't true, but if it helped people, wouldn't that be good enough, I guess?
I think it's because of the way it's marketed, like the fact that you go with that nonfiction hook of this is this guy's true story and here it all goes versus like this is a story this guy made up. And even if the people connect to something when they think it's real,
well, wouldn't the same
news in a way.
Well, wouldn't that be the same thing as like Blair Witch Project labeling it as a true story or Paranormal Activity, but it's not? I don't know.
Because I think that people are in on the fact that it wasn't real. Whereas with A Million Little Pieces, people believed it was real until it was debunked. Like the publishers believed that he was telling the truth. Like he spun such a lie about it versus like a marketing tactic.
And do you think Oprah overreacted to it, or do you think her reaction was justifiable?
I think life is so different now that the revealing of a person's memoir, like we don't expect people's memoirs to be 100% fact anymore. And I think it's because of that experience. So it's hard to say in that case, but I do think that she struggled with her decision, or she struggled with that because of the fact that she completely shut down that book club. And the book club was so important to her because she wanted to help encourage women to read and to think for themselves and to get children reading. And literacy was a very, very important thing for her. So when she decided to stop doing the book club for a few years, it was detrimental because also like publishers really relied on her word of mouth for a book.
Right.
And there was even a time where she wasn't going to bring authors on the show at all.
Yeah.
So, but she got over it eventually, as she always does. She just needs a little time to think about it. And always, what I love about Oprah is she's always asking, what is the purpose of something? Like she wants all of her, she wants all of her interviews to have some sort of purpose to them. Even if it's just an interview with a woman who has four different dogs, she wants to know why that woman's connection to those dogs is so important. And that's something I think that she brings out in all of her guests and all of her stories and something that we can all connect to.
Yeah, absolutely. You said the words right out of my mouth. That's the connection right there. I think like we all have something that is really important to us, and a lot of people might have the same importance. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too. We love you, Oprah.
We love you, Oprah. In addition to Oprah's show and radio and news and interviews, she's also a pretty phenomenal actress, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I would say. Isn't she Oscar nominated for her role in The Color Purple? Did
yeah.
I make that up?
No. She was nominated for Oscar, Golden Globe, for Color Purple in 1985, which was directed by Steven Spielberg, and was Oprah's first movie she ever was in.
Yeah. Yeah. She's amazing. Like the fact that she is just, she's a little triple threat, you know, like she can act, she can host and do interviews comfortably, and then she can run an empire.
She really does it all. And with her movies, she does a lot of voice roles, but she also picks movies, live action movies that are really, I guess not, I won't want to say taboo subjects, but very, you know, racially charged and, you know,
yes,
promote civil
statement
rights
pieces.
And stuff like
that. She wants to say something with her storytelling, which is great. And then she was also in Beloved. I'm going back and looking at her IMDb right right now, and she took a big chunk of time off during the show, but as soon as she finished the show, she came out with a force doing more and more movies.
She did. She was in The Butler.
Mm-hmm. Good in The Butler.
She was great in The Butler. And she was also in Selma. Mm-hmm. And now she was recently in the animated movie The Star, and then she's going to be in the upcoming film A Wrinkle in Time.
And I, Brian, cannot wait. Have you seen the trailers for this movie?
I have seen the trailers for this movie. And, you know, it's directed by Ava DuVernay, who did mm-hmm. Selma. And mm-hmm. it stars Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, Michael Pena, Zach Galifianakis, Chris Pine, and Gugu Mbatha-Raw. I think I'm pronouncing that right, hopefully. But, yeah, this movie looks crazy. Do you know anything about this movie?
A Wrinkle in Time? Well, yeah. It is it's a very, very, very famous young adult book by Madeline Ingalls.
Okay.
And it was one of my absolute favorite books growing up. It's about a little girl who is trying to find her lost father who's taken to another dimension. And so she goes to that next dimension to search for her dad, and meanwhile learns her connection to it. So it's kind of like Wizard of Oz meets Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe with a little bit of the Golden Compass involved in there as well.
And it's interesting because if you look at Oprah's other movies, such as like Selma, The Butler, Color Purple, for her to pick a live-action movie like A Wrinkle in Time, kind of like this sci-fi fantasy Disney movie, mm-hmm. it seems out of the norm for her, but she must...
It definitely does.
This must be one of her favorite books, too.
I think so. I think that she must really love it, and I think that she was excited about bringing the story, because what's also really great about it is it's so diverse in the cast, and it's such a colorful cast that I think that so many young girls who are going to see this movie are going to be so excited to see the world that they're creating.
Right, right.
And you're right. Like, it's completely different than everything else that's kind of on her CV, because then she's also got, like, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, which she did earlier this year, which was a HBO biopic based off of a book and an experience of a woman whose genes were taken away from her to figure out how to cure cancer.
Okay.
And it's a great, that was a really great movie and really, really moving.
No, it's awesome. So my question about that is, why do you think Oprah left her talk show? Was it to do these movies? Was it just she was getting bored of it? Was it time to do it? Or do you think that it was just to pursue other endeavors like these movies that she's doing?
Well, so in the and she's done a lot of interviews about this, but in the podcast Becoming Oprah, she actually sits down and talks with the interviewer about that. And it comes down to it was just time. She'd been doing it for 25 years. Her time was not her own anymore. And she could have kept, of course, she could have kept doing it for years and years and years and years, but she was just ready to do something different. And she also came into it thinking that she was going to be able to take her popularity and her golden touch and no longer be beholden to a company or anything. She was going to start her own company. And that's the interesting thing. When she decided to start OWN, she learned, and she talks about the mistakes that she made starting OWN, because she almost lost everything starting that network. And it took her 4 years for it to become even a household name. Like, yeah. So even Oprah has stumbling blocks that we all thought, oh, Oprah's starting a TV channel, it's going to be super easy and wonderful. And it's like, no, it wasn't. It was really, really hard for her. And it took her a decade for it to become something as viable as her talk show.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess when starting a whole channel and a network, you have to have a lot of content.
You have to have a lot of content, and you have to be part of it. And that was the thing that when she left the show to do OWN, she wanted to be the face of OWN, but she didn't want to have a show on it. Like, she had no interest in moving the Oprah Winfrey show there or doing a talk show on it. And then she quickly learned that that's what people are tuning in for. That's what they want to see is Oprah. They're not here to see the different Oprah-like talk show hosts. They're there to see her. So that's what she had to do her masterclass, the Super Soul Sundays, and all the different sort of talk show interviews that she would eventually show her face on, because she eventually realized that she needed to be just as big a part of the company as she was projecting herself to be.
Yeah, yeah. No, of course. Of course. Do you think she'll ever return to like a network prime time format at any point?
I don't know. I mean, I was surprised when earlier this year it was announced that she was joining 60 Minutes as a correspondent, because I didn't think she really wanted to go back into the interviewing sphere. But with that opening the door for her, and she started doing that in September of this year, and she's done some really interesting interviews, I think it could be possible that she might be interested in coming back and doing another show. But she's also really busy, and she's in her 60s and wants to enjoy all the hard work that she and Stedman have put together to do.
So, yeah, let's talk about Stedman for a second.
Yep.
Why has she never married Stedman?
I'm trying to remember what she said about getting married and why she's never wanted to. But it just kind of came down to the fact that once she becomes a wife, she has to become a wife.
Ah, okay.
And that was a thing that she never really wanted to be. She wanted to have the freedom. And so not marrying Stedman, they have a good enough relationship that it's okay, even though they've been engaged since 1992.
Maybe Oprah has it right. Maybe we are all to just live together or be engaged and not get married, because marriage.
Well, I'll tell you what, I would like to get married. Just because I want to have a really pretty wedding. It's going to be so much fun. All my friends will be there. Oprah's going to come.
Oprah's going to come. We got to get Oprah to your wedding.
Right? That would be super fun.
It'll be awesome. Yeah. And so since Oprah has all of this stuff, like she is the queen of media, she has more money than most people on the planet combined.
Yep.
Tons of assets. Has she talked about, like, when she passes away, where it's all going? Is it going to her charities that she started? Is she doing a foundation? Is she going to be frozen in time?
I don't think Oprah's going to die.
Okay.
I think that she is just, they're just going to take her brain and it'll be like reverse Get Out, where they just put her in other white people.
Fantastic. I like this. It's reverse Get Out.
It's reverse Get Out, and it's all like former Fox hosts or something.
Gwen, do you realize what you've just done?
I made the Get Out sequel.
Can we get Jordan Peele on the phone and tell him Jordan. This? I had an epiphany. What are you doing? This is amazing. I just want to do an episode now on Get Out, this Get Out sequel.
We have so many questions about this sequel of a movie that we just created.
This is amazing.
I would watch that show and that movie. I would watch it all.
I would. I do. I like it. Now, I'm sure Oprah's got a plan in place for sure.
Well, she's got lots of foundations. She has lots of charitable organizations that she works with. She has her school in Africa for young girls. And so I think that her money will go into trust. She has godchildren that she takes care of, and she's also very close with Gail King, and I'm sure Gail's probably gonna get a little bit of something if possible, or Gail's kids. So I think that she's got enough friends and family, not direct family, but friends that she will take care of and then put it into something, and maybe make an Oprah Winfrey library to go right next to Barack Obama's library.
That would be awesome.
It would be super cool.
Do you have a question about Gail?
Okay. So here's the thing that I did not realize, that Miss Oprah Winfrey's middle name is Gail and her best friend is Gail. And I wonder if they are friends because of that.
It's the whole Illuminati thing, I think.
I think so.
No, it's interesting that's the way it is. Like, that's pretty cool. You know what? Speaking of names and stuff, did you know her real name is Orpa and not Oprah?
That's horrible.
She was born Orpa, but somebody accidentally called it Oprah, and it stuck. So it is Oprah, but she was born Orpa, Gail Winfrey.
Oh.
Interesting, huh? Just the R and the P were switched.
So switched. Just got a little dyslexia on that one.
Yeah. Well, Oprah, I mean, so it's funny because in the late 80s and early 90s, there were so many jokes about Oprah, like in movies and television, about mostly about her weight, I guess.
Yes, she did have a very public struggle with her weight and still does.
And you know what? She like confronts it all. And I guess she's talked about one of her most uncomfortable times being on television was sitting with David Letterman on his talk show, because David, of course, always joked about Oprah. And she came on the show and she just like felt uncomfortable because she thought he was going to joke about it, and he didn't. But
no.
But it shows that Oprah really just stands up to it. She didn't give a shit about any of that. She just,
no.
You know, it's awesome. And you could like literally, if you weren't alive in the late 80s or early 90s, you could pretty much go to any talk show back then or like silly comedy movie, and there are Oprah jokes in it.
always Oprah jokes, because also at the time was like in the 80s is when she was doing very like outlandish interviews and similar things that we would see like in Sally Jesse Raphael and like the tabloidy style. And then in the 90s she reinvented herself as sort of a spiritually woke sort of guru person. And then in the aughts, she turned into sort of like an older woman who was looking back on her life and reevaluating everything and being comfortable in her own skin. So I think that that's really, I think that, and it goes back to why I think she was successful at keeping that show on the air for 25 years, because it went through quite a number of cycles.
Yeah, no, it definitely, it did. And like, it went through different cycles as well. I think Oprah herself changed over time as well.
Yes.
I can see like the progressive different tryouts of like what's gonna work, what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
Did you ever see, speaking of Gail, because I love Gail, did you ever watch the Gail and Oprah do a road trip?
I did not. That sounds amazing.
So for one of the seasons of the Oprah Winfrey Show, for like a week or 2 weeks, they did this whole thing. I think it must have just been a week. It was every day was just Oprah and Gail driving from one part of the country to the other at a road trip, best friends on television. And you could see like Oprah didn't know how to pump gas because she had never pumped gas.
It's funny to think about that, but I guess when you've been a celeb so long like that, you have drivers and you don't worry about that anymore. Yeah.
And like the last time you drove, maybe it was when there was still self-service or a full service, so you didn't have to do it yourself. So yeah, that's Oprah. That was really good. I wonder if that's on YouTube. You can go back and look for the videos of Gail and Oprah on a road trip together, like at each other's throats.
Yeah, I need to check that out.
Was definitely a test in friendship.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, do you have any other questions about Oprah?
So I just have one more question about Oprah. Okay. Have you ever met Oprah?
I have never met Oprah.
Have you ever been in the same world as Oprah?
I have never been in the same room, studio, or anything as Oprah yet.
I had a chance to see her do like a show, like her Super Soul Sunday show when she was in Dallas a few years ago at the American Airlines Center. It was the coolest experience of my life.
Really? How?
Because, so first of all, like I'm very interested in production of like how a show is made and how a concert is put on. And so this was like a perfect combination of this very large concert special event thing where they like pull you in at a certain time. And they were able to essentially take like the Oprah Winfrey style show, which would only have maybe 50, 60, 70 people in the audience for that, and translate that to an entire arena that holds 30,000 people.
Wow.
And, you know, it was seamless. It was streamlined. It was like kind of like you and I, Brian and I had a chance to see Conan O'Brien a few years ago when he came to Dallas, and the same sort of thing of like, you're going to hit all these notes. This is how you clap. This is how you laugh. This is all the things you have to do. And yeah, it was just super cool. And then all of a sudden she came out And she just was Oprah. And she's like walking down the aisles, and I just like lost my mind, Brian. I was like, oh my God, are we getting cars?
We're all getting cars. Because you and I went to see Conan O'Brien at one point. But I imagine Oprah's just on a different level.
Yeah, completely different level. Like on a huge, I felt like I was at like a mega church. Like it was just, it blew my mind.
No, I would love the chance to interview Oprah and just pick her brain and ask her what her favorite scenes in movies are. What's her record collection like?
She's probably like, what's a record, Brian?
She knows what records are. I know she likes music.
That's true. So. She also likes to host parties. So I always love watching her. During Thanksgiving last week, she did a bunch of Instagram posts of her meals. And I wish that we had all been invited to her house.
We need to have a goal. And I think between your resources and my resources, I bet you we can do a little show, little documentary on us getting to Oprah and having dinner with her.
Oh my God, that would be so fun.
Oh, we need to do this. I think that would be the best thing in life, in the world, in the planet.
It would be.
Oh my goodness.
And on that note, I don't think we have anything else to say. I don't think I have any more questions. Do you have any more questions?
I don't have any more questions. I think, I hope that we answered a lot of questions that people might have not known about Oprah. And even if Oprah listens to this show, I would hope that she would find something about herself that she didn't know.
Well, you better believe I'm going to tag her when we do social for it.
Oh, good, good deal.
This is when we talk about Oprah. At Oprah, be our friend.
Awesome. So yeah, we have questions. We're on Stitcher Radio and iTunes. And we're going to have more shows where we have questions about different subjects. Yep. Where can they find you, Gwen?
You can get me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Real Vixen, RealVixen. Or on Facebook, I am The Gwen Reyes.
Sweet deal. And of course, find me at boomstickcomics.com and highdefdigest.com. And we'll see you next week with We Have Questions. We'll see you later.
Bye, Brian.
Bye.